Down to Brass Tacks, you're on the air.
Good morning, Mrs.
Good morning.
Yes, I would like to raise three little points with you. You could allow all to pass outside your stand, or you could entertain me in my conversation. Now, they have a young station in Barbados, Slam 101, I could call it, because it's a normal station. I wouldn't call it a big advertisement. When this by-election was first called, I didn't study in, like, listening to Miss Undecided and the moderator at that station. It's calling Saul. I don't know if that's his real name, but I was calling Saul. And they opened my eyes to something that, even though I'm thinking about, before I call you, Miss Hayes, what you think about calling a by-election in the middle of this COVID where people be gathering? What do you think about? Can you help me with that, or are you going to let that pass outside your stand?
I think if it is needed and you have to put the measures in place in order to make sure that you have... You know what's the problem here? When someone answers a question, it may not be the answer you want, but it's the answer I'm going to give. You asked me what I thought about calling a by-election in the middle of a COVID pandemic. Is that the question? And I said, my response was... Providing, if you call a by-election, then all protocols must be in place to make sure that people are safe while they're doing what they're doing. Same thing for the U.S.
Let's move on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you know said to me makes no sense.
No,
because
I didn't expect it to.
This by-election is going to have at least 5 political parties. Okay? They can have house-to-house campaigning. The one shots can be crowded because I is a campaigner. Everybody know what I think. I only know that I have lost my vision. I will be on the street on a daily basis. Like one thing, if I had my vision, I'd be at St. George already. But what I'm saying is this: if you having all of these restrictions, like some of my school friends and things that I do this and thing, that doing lessons and things that go to school one day and et cetera, et cetera. If you could have so much restrictions dealing with this virus, and you could decide to keep political meetings, they had a big one out here on Sunday, and there's another one tomorrow night. Now the other parties didn't start yet. How are you going to control the coronavirus in an environment like that? And let me go on to say, what are you really... is working my head, and I'm thinking about that these two young people, I don't know how young Mr. Undecided is, but I know the youngster, young guy, told me his age. In Trinidad, before the election, Trinidad had their coronavirus under control, you know. You remember that, Mrs.?
Go ahead.
In Jamaica, they didn't have it under control, but it didn't at the level it is at now. I was surprised this morning to hear Jamaica have now reached 100 lives gone. Two, 3 months ago, I couldn't believe that Jamaica would ever lose 100 lives. So listening to Saul and Miss Undecided, they have to know they say if they don't believe it should be hell, they invented to that type of word. They were just questioning and all of us, which I join them now, hope that the people will understand that if 150 people alone should be in a church, I would like to know how you're going to control political meetings. That is all I would like to know. And I would say I admire those two folks to advising and helping Barbados that if they attend these meetings, they make sure that they space themselves in areas that...
Are you confident enough that all political parties would make sure or try their best?
No political party which I'm a member of could control people.
No. You let me finish it. Don't you think that they would try to do their best to ensure that people adhere to the protocols?
At political meetings, which I hear you say you're not involved, you don't like it, and the Scott people like me are cooler person, I think. What I'm saying is, at political meetings, alcohol, the shops near to wherever that meeting is, they do good. And when people drink alcohol, you don't know what they will do. I'm an alcohol drinker. And so let me go on to my next point, because I don't want to take up all the time, and then when I want to make my main point.
All right, make your main point.
No, I have two more little points.
Okay, go ahead.
On Sunday, I was listening to the TV, and I heard the former secretary of the Barbados Workers Union say that the candidate named by the Barbados Labour Party for the St. George North election only became a member of the Barbados Labour Party 7 days ago, which I think would be 12 or 13 now. Now, he's very close to her, so I can't argue that with him, because he got no. But I would like to tell him, as a sir, because he carries that title, Sir Roy Twatman, that there are three union leaders in Barbados. The three of them still holding those positions. That might not be a member like how I'm a member of the DLP. They might not be a member of the Barbados Labour Party. But they were working in the interest of the Barbados Labour Party for the last 6 years. You don't have to be a member to do party work. And I would like him to know, which I know he knows, that when a union or unions at that time know that the government of Barbados is borrowing money monthly to keep people employed, borrowing money from Central Bank, and people like Dr. Clay Maskell coming on the air, and a lady from Trinidad all about the Caribbean, we were saying the Royal Barbados government is taking printing money is going to hurt, but they were borrowing money to pay workers, you know. And the three of these great union leaders that ain't political was asking for 18 or 20% salary raise from a government that was borrowing to pay who they had before. And the thing that is so frightening, and when I hear these people, I smell, where are we going? And listen to this, that make it even worse, that they're saying they're not, that they weren't political. When the government change, the same unions sit down and agree to 4.5%. They move from 18 and 23, respectively, to 4.5%.
So you don't think, Alvin, that sometimes when situations change, then the negotiations can change?
I didn't say it didn't change, but I just explained it to you that this is how they change. And let me tell you, they agreed for 4.5% and was given 5%. Okay.
So, but what's the point that one wanted 23% with another administration? And the other administration, they wanted 4.5% and got 5%. Is that the point?
Listen, what I'm trying to tell you is this here. These union leaders that was looking after, which I know there wasn't, the interest of the workers, was asking for 18 and 23% increase in salary at a time when the administration was borrowing money to keep them employed. And then when the government changed, they agreed 4.5%, mm-hmm. and the government gave them 5%.
Right.
And then take back 1%.
But my point is, asking you a question. If it is that they wanted 23% or whatever it was, higher percentage with the previous administration, and they settled for 5% with this current administration, don't you not think that possibly things change, that the percentage would have to change based on the fact that there was no money?
They will have to come and tell me what changed. You can't even...
But I'm saying that this is what... Well, I think everybody was listening when they said that the fact is that there was no money.
Listen to this, Mr.
Isn't that what they said, Alvin?
Again, that's all conversation.
No, but I'm asking you, did I hear wrong? Because you listen to these things more than me, so I'm asking if that's what they said.
I am explaining to you, I'm dealing with one part of it. Mm-hmm. They said that they were members of the Barbados Labour Party. That is where and what I'm dealing with. And to tell me that the government don't have no money and got 26 ministers, 42 advisors, including one for $54 million alone, that is work. Don't tell me I have money. I could be doing
I never things. Said they didn't have money. I'm saying, is that what I'm asking? Isn't that what they said?
The impression you just give me, miss.
But it's not an impression. Did I not say, Alvin, did the government say that they had no money? That's all I'm asking.
So how they could say they had no money and doing those things?
But that's why I said, all I ask you is if that was what was said, sweetheart. Don't get too flustered.
No, I mean, you should not ask questions that you know.
Well, I don't. Oh, don't assume that I do. But anyway, you need to wrap up. I'm being told by the producer.
No, let me. Okay.
I'm being instructed by the producer.
Well, I am. Mm-hmm. You are instructed by the whom?
Producer controls the show, Alvin. Let's please.
I know, but I sit here.
Please
and
continue.
Enjoy.
Come on. Let's wrap it up. Let's get your last point in quickly.
I sit here and enjoy two conversations you had, and each of the last 10 or 15 minutes.
Okay. My name's like 10 seconds, 15 seconds. You want to put your last point in quickly?
What I would tell you, Miss Hayes, to me, you acting like the same three non-BLBs.
Oh,
you have a good day.
Thank you so much, Alvin. You know, there's a big difference between callers talking about things of genuine concern, and especially when it's their personal experience, like the gentleman who called and spoke about being unemployed and things like that. And you don't call those complaints. You refer to those as people expressing themselves and letting us know what they are going through. And then there are callers that don't have problems really personally, but then try their best to create some, which is fine. I mean, they're free to do that. But it's just really sad that people just come and just say things because they have an agenda, and it's not necessarily about the country. And I find that in this whole thing called politics, at the end of the day, it's about the people of Barbados, whether or not you wear whatever color it is, red shirt or a blue shirt. We are all Barbadians. And when the bell rings, and in this case, there's a by-election, you expect to hear all types of things, and people go into their corners and they strategize and they, I guess, they mudsling and so on and so forth. And then, of course, when the by-election is over, we're supposed to get back to business as usual. So I get that kind of those kinds of contributions. But even outside of that, their callers constantly pull down. And it's just really sad, because at the end of the day, when you ask them what is the solution, they can't tell you. They don't have any. They just know, like, if they're programmed to call this program, then to just say the same thing over and over and over again. Anyway, down to brass tacks. You're on the air.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Hi.
Okay. The first thing I like to say, an observation. It seems as though the opposition parties has run out of steam. Timid now, man. They're getting timid. Come on. Don't get timid, guys. Don't get timid at this point in time. Now, what I like to say to you is a big difference between hearing and listening. You can hear something, that means that you have listened. Okay? Now, the salary increase, this happened at the table, bargaining table. It's called a bargaining table. We have opposite sides, just put a proposal on the table, and you work your way either up or down to an agreement. Now, I hear people keep knocking this thing about 23% and 80% by the unions, but they never ever spoke on what the Prime Minister at the time said. He said he was starting at zero. How can you start at zero? So much for that. I would like to know, right? Can anybody tell me, really, why did the LP really want to get their hands on Barbados? Because every time, the record shows that every time they do, the country is running. They run the country aground. The last time in 2008 to 2018, the 10 lost years, was the worst in history. Barbados must be saved from the D's because of their pattern of failure. One could describe it as the reverse might just touch. syndrome.
You know that between yourself and the previous caller, Starcom Network should start charging you guys.
Yeah,
really,
but that's all right.
For
that's
ads.
All right.
Because
that's all right.
It's
that's
one after ad. The next, it
this
seems.
This is not an ad. This is not an ad. This is a call on the call-in program that I think I am entitled to make like any other caller in Barbados. But this is not an ad. I'm not speaking.
Make your point. You know exactly what I'm saying. You come and you say what you have to say. The previous caller, we all know he's for one party. You're for the next party.
Do not link me with no caller.
I just did.
Do not link me with no caller.
Let's not lose control. Let's not lose control. I'm just saying, first it was that caller and now it's you. I'm not taking away from what you are saying and not stopping you from your contribution.
But
I'm saying Starcom Network.
Of
course.
Why charge him not be paying me for making contributions? I just made better contributions on this program several in Barbados.
You know, I do have on headphones. I have on headphones.
Yes,
I can hear you. No need to raise your voice.
You have driven me to that.
No, I haven't.
You're looking at me. And telling me to charge him, to charge
you know that,
me.
No,
ad.
I said you guys, ad. It's not you only. And if you want
but
to
no,
take
you,
that
don't
personal.
Don't link me to anybody. I take offense to that.
Why? You come every time and this is what you speak about. And, similarly for the other caller.
No, I can speak to any matter. I don't.
Did
think
not
you
stop
have,
you.
Think,
it was my opinion.
You are stopping me.
Listen,
I don't think
listen,
have,
all right, you
they
know
don't
what?
Have a plan for
hold on
that.
A minute. No, you need to hold on. Calm down. You want to have a conversation? Continue the conversation.
Oh,
if you
wait,
raise
wait,
your
wait,
voice, hold on. I have on headphones and really is piercing my ears. Let's have a calm conversation. Continue.
Did that stop
continue.
Me?
I did because I made
yeah,
a comment.
Wait, you did. You tell me that. Sorry, I'm going
to
take a
but you need to
that.
Calm down, though. Seriously.
But yeah, use the body that. Use the
you
body
need
that.
Look,
that
hold
me,
on.
That
hold
and,
on. Let's
and,
get. Let's. Did. Let's move on.
I could have.
Move on, or we're going to have. If you finish, let me know. But you need
listen,
to move on.
Right? I don't think I'm going to ready to continue. Thanks, man.
Okay. Thank you too. Down to brass tacks. You are on the air. Good morning. 11:25, you're on the air. Go ahead. Caller, go ahead. We can hear you.
Okay. I just heard it be good morning to you.
Yes. Good morning.
You're going to be having some excitement in the studio today.
Well, regular day.
Okay. All right. I'll try to be calm in as much as the subject matter that I'm bringing is one that, it has taken a toll on not just myself, but I'm sure the country over the last few years. And it relates to the state of gun violence that has bombarded us, has infiltrated our communities and decimated many of our young men. While there are those who would want to focus on by elections and, you know, the sense to which new candidates, union leaders, or whatever are emerging, I think day by day we endure and are wondering, who next, based on the level of gun crime and gun activity in our community. I'm sure last week we were, most of the island would have been touched by the unfortunate death of been that vendor who at one point all of us would have interacted with because of his way of, that may his soul rest in peace, and I express condolences to his family. But that to me, it represents such a stain, such a deep hole that we've fallen into. And I don't think that we can sidestep it. I don't think that we can ignore it. I don't think that we can, not treat to it. While the authorities have their way, the police will do their investigations, but there is a sense to which we have to begin to put things in place to treat to this. And your first caller, a young lady, spoke to a system that is being employed to give youth the opportunity to register their concerns and so on across the nation. I listened to the news yesterday, and the minister spoke to a particular aspect of it where he identified a number of the persons who gravitate to delinquent behavior as coming from single-parent homes. You know, the sociological impact of such phenomena, you know, is telling. It's not new, but I think the extent to which we respond to stuff is dependent on our desire to make meaningful change. And I've, you know, having traversed the system for a number of years, I've made some keen observations, and one of them relates to the absence of male interveners or workers, social workers, in critical parts of the system. And I've known guys, we did the program, the social work program at UWE, a number of us would have been there, and some of them have had to seek employment in other jurisdictions because the doors are closed. I'm simply saying that for a matter of strategy, we need to be mindful of the fact that criminals on the block are recruiting young men and mentoring them and feeding them into a life of crime. It's been going on for a number of years. The appropriate response, the appropriate strategic response, therefore, would be to counter that by having the strategic personnel in place to treat to these instances of young men who are gravitating towards crime. And it's not rocket science. In Canada, I traversed there, and they grabbled me up. They said, come and work. We need a young man like you to come and work. I'm saying that in my island, we have a problem, and we need to we can't sidestep it. We can't send our young female workers into the hood to do investigations. We need men, and there are men available. They're qualified men. Let's utilize them. I don't know what more we can do. What we can say, I'm not saying that this will be the panacea for the end of the problem, but it will go a long way in diverting some of these young men. We can't save all, I know that, but we can save more of them. And I this is my by election can come and go, governments will come and go, but we have a problem that we need to fix. Mm-hmm. My plea is that we respond. I mean, John King's trying to figure out how many more? Who next? I mean, this young man was an innocent at his home. I mean, where he lives. Do we need this? We need to have this fixed. And I know, you know, we call for the Attorney General said, we call for whoever said, but this is a problem that we need to fix. And I pray that we try and respond appropriately. This is bigger than any by election. This is life, a matter of life or death, and we need to treat to it.
What do you think are some of the contributing factors? Unemployment, possibly?
Well, sure, for sure.
A major factor? Because, you know, I only this morning was speaking to someone, and as you said, you can't save all, but there are some career criminals, and no matter what you do, offer them, that's the life that they want because easy money.
And the way the system is set up, mm-hmm. as it currently pertains, it simply dodges the reality is that guys will go there and they languish on the remand for years, and they're or only school, then how better not to get caught the next time? The reality is that there are criminal networks who recruit young men, and they can make tons of money, and they're going to tell you that they're not going to do it 8 to 4 where mm-hmm. and you know they laugh at us who are in the system and drive little cars. The reality is that these guys make good money, and they that's there. But I'm saying that we have to intervene in a way that will divert. And give these young men options because and tell them the truth. They runs until night catches.
But some of them are actually given the options that you speak of. I know of some young men that were offered jobs, then they don't show up, and then man, listen, I could stop home and I could make more than that because you gave me that kind of money. So they start off pretty good. They get real excited when they realize, okay, I got a job. About a week or two it lasts, and then they walk away from it.
No, but you see, a lot of them come to their senses, you know, perhaps in their early 30s, late 30s, early 40s, mm-hmm. when they've spent a number of years in jail, and it, you know, it suddenly awake and say, oh my gosh, I do now my life. The reality is that the game has gone ahead of them, and they find themselves languishing. So, but if they live that long anyway, but mm-hmm. my challenge is, we have to put the systems in place. I think the system is broken. The system is ineffective. and the government of the day, the powers that be, the social service agencies, have to be more strategic. It is not effective, and we need to tweak to it. That's my concern. And I've been carrying this crusade for 15 years now. Mm-hmm. I'm falling on deaf ears. We're seeing people who I've seen youngsters in the system who are now older guys at the prison. We need to change this.
I think they need opportunity for sure. I've had an experience where I was responsible. I was training a group of young guys from a block, and you were happy to see that they changed their lives. That who got ATM card, this buddy, you know, that they weren't on the block anymore selling and so on and so forth. And they really made an effort because they like to know that somebody believed in them. And they also like to know when they get a pat on the back and go like, good job, because people like that. But there are a lot of young people who get a lot of insults from their families, and you'll amount to nothing, and you can graduate to jail, and you know, all those types of things. And they educated me about how people treat them. I'm not saying that we got to sort of massage everybody and do that, but at the end of the day, you still got to treat people like human beings. So when a guy comes off the block, or he comes from a poor environment, and all he's hearing is all this negative and negative and negative, and nobody's giving him a chance, nobody's praising him when he does something good. I remember training them, and like you give them, you kind of compliment them. And they do wrong, you tell them. But it gave me great pleasure to see them move from one point. And I'm talking about men that went to prison, men that had cases pending. People started changing. Like, the problem occurred when they lost a job.
Okay, yeah, and the reality is, though, that lots of guys come out, and they because of the stigma attached to being
they're not given the opportunity.
I think that we are in a situation where that has to change. We have with an increasing level of joblessness, and if we're talking about empowering our male population at the critical age where they will make a significant input in terms of their ability to work.
But how do you tell an employer, say somebody like Dennis doing a business, and this guy comes out of prison with gun charges, and he shot somebody, or he raped someone. Even though we are saying that they deserve an opportunity, you know, the average person, if they don't know them, they may hire them because they may know the mother, you know, doing somebody a favor. But realistically, when you have that kind of background, and recently, because that's why I guess it takes a little while to get the record expunged so they stay out of trouble, so people can make sure you've changed. So when we talk about giving persons coming out of a prison an opportunity, we're talking about taking a chance.
That's true.
You know, so a lot of people don't want to do that. And in particular, in the environment that we're in, mm-hmm. let's just say with guns, all this gun violence, it is actually harder for a man to come out of prison with a gun charge. Even if he had a gun charge 5 years ago and he don't come out, it's really hard for him to get a job.
But the truth is, it's harder for a person to change once they have become socialized in that sleight of crime. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying that the system, therefore, needs to target them before the 12, the 10, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. Those are the ones we need to target. Those are the ones who, in the inner cities, they're at-risk youth who we need to target. And I'm saying that we have to be very strategic. We have to do mentorship. We have to get males in the system to help divert these, to work in the communities, to help divert these guys, the females. Of course, we're going to partner with them and work, because many of them are doing all they can and doing great work. But I'm saying that there must be a significant increase in proportion to what attains now, so that we can have meaningful interventions. Fatherlessness is a problem. We need to have father figures in the system to work. That's all I'm saying.
Right, okay.
Right.
Want to thank you. Love that contribution. Thank you so much. Down to Brass Tacks, you're on the air. Good morning. 11:37, you are on the air.
Huh?
Yes, hi.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
Yeah. You hear me?
Loud and clear.
Good, thanks. Now, you know, I'm getting a little slowly. So I have two questions.
All age?
Yeah, all age and senile and everything all in one. So I don't know if you can help me with two questions I want to put to you.
What's that?
I don't want my contributions, just two questions. I heard you refer to a caller a couple of minutes ago as Alvin. Is that the same Alvin who said a couple of days ago that Violet Beza were too slow?
I really don't know. I didn't hear a couple of days ago, so I'm not sure. But
okay, then.
Make your point.
Good. I wonder if that the same Alvin who said that he is afraid of any government who goes to parliament and change laws to suit themselves. Not remembering that his same Democratic Labour Party government went to parliament and changed a law to bring a Chief Justice into Barbados. And I could think about five other laws that they changed. I thank you very much. So I won't keep you any longer.
All right. Thank you so much. Down to brass tacks. Could you turn your radio off? You are on the air. Caller, you're listening to your radio. Caller.
Hey.
Yes. Good morning. Could you turn your radio?
Good morning.
Yes. Go ahead.
Good morning, Joyanne. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
It made my radio. I can't get to it, so I'm sorry about that.
That's
I was
okay.
listening.
Mm-hmm.
No, I want to tell you. I tell you here. I hope I'm clear. I lie here every day. And I listen to the callers who come on, and they are disrespectful, cantankerous, and what we can put in there, a lot more. And they seem as though they're wearing gloves, sparring for a fight. Now, I would like to tell you, if you, these people have an issue, they talk about it. When they come to fight you or any other moderator, I would like you to test and all the adjust there. And when they've had their say, thank you for calling and have a good day. Because, I mean, it's ridiculous the way they carry on. You listen to all over the world. It's what is out there, those people down there, always fighting on the radio.
Well, yeah. So let's not give them the spotlight.
So anyway,
then,
I think you have nerves of steel, though. I think you have nerves of steel. Thank you, bud.
All right. Thank you. This WhatsApper says, good morning, Joyanne. You are so right when you say that some of these young men are given jobs, then they work for 2 to 3 weeks, leave the job and say that they can work for more being on the block. And they don't bother to get the experience. And I've seen that happening a lot. This other WhatsApper says here, good morning. I'm here listening to these regular callers. Wonder if the rain has, okay, I need to, can't read that one. I will have to go through that one because there's too much editing there. Let's get back to the callers. One other person here says, I'm fed up of these political callers. 1 minute is DLP, BLP, so on and so forth, that they're sick of it. And it kind of kills the program, basically, what they're saying. Down to brass tacks, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Miss Steve.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am. That gentleman that called just now about the lawlessness we have in the island, when the two major parties stop dealing politically and start to deal with the problem, that's the only way it's been solved. If you were wrong in the early 70s, Barrow, at the time Prime Minister Barrow, gave the police walkie-talkies, and he said, if you see three people up together, that's a crowd, arrest. And it had everything under control. We had restrictions here with the COVID, this problem with our sickness, as you know. Everybody was on lockdown, and he didn't have any killings. Because people were not gathering outside. If you do not put things in place, we will never be able. And Barrow had it. He was ridiculed for what he had done at the time because the Black Power movement was really in the air. And he was ridiculed for it. But they have to stop talking when they're in opposition. And that's what the opposition is doing all the time with the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, with transport, with the stuff. And each one of them, when they're in opposition, they know how to fix it. It's when they get in that we still remain with the problem. Unless that they start look into these things as really people who live in Barbados. That's the only way we can get it solved. What I do not understand, I think he named Tallboy, came just now, and this is the second time I hear somebody saying when the last government in power, what they did. Am I to believe that when the other one get in, they're to take what somebody you think that was wrong and do, and we can continue giving blessing to it? I'm glad I heard the stats, man, and I thought he would have given me the breakdown of how the government saved within the last 2 years of the 13.5%. What he quoted was that think tank said that they could not afford to pay the increase at the time. I think it was Ms. Goldman or some so from the IMF came, met with the opposition leader, met with him, Zinkler, met with the union, and they saw that the country could not bear it. They asked him, the IMF said, borrow the money and correct the problem. And they were saying, borrow the money. At the time, the union knew that the government can stay for it. That is exactly what bringing about the problem. Why, after the change of government, they had settled for what, when they know it can happen. What my observation is that when Senator Trotman was there, when Senator Tony Moore took over, the union had already lost its teeth. It was only a dog that was barking, but it wasn't biting. And if you remember the problem with Sandy Lane, the Royal Shop, and we could go on, because contributors' money and living, they can respond.
Oh, well, let me ask you a question. What do you look for in a politician, in an MP, your representative?
Pardon?
Forget party. What qualities, if you have to vote, what qualities do you look for in a representative?
A person that will be honest. Mm-hmm. And in other words, I vote against Frank Walker. Mm-hmm. That side was for DLP. But he lose because of his ignorance, of his arrogance. And it seems like each time these people get in power for 10 years or so, something rusts in their mind that they can talk down to people and treat people as they like, and they forget exactly that they walk among the people.
But I want to agree with you with that because I find that that's where they lose their way and lose an election. They come in, and then all of a sudden you can't find them, you can't hear them. They talk down to you, they drive past you. They don't come down in the areas anymore. And, you know, that's why it's so important for these clinics that they have on Wednesdays, that they still meet with the people. I know it's hard sometimes being a minister and still having to look after your constituents. But as that caller said to me earlier who wanted employment, he said, sometimes we just need an ear. We just need someone to listen.
Not everybody looking for hands out. Everybody is not looking for hands up. No. People are looking for people that will hold their integrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And be honest.
And I think that's important. And I find that, you know, after a while, and both parties made this mistake in the past. You get in and, you know, three years pass or 2 years and everybody gets comfortable and people forget why they're there. So it's so important for this government, at least, if they want to have a second term and even possibly a third. Never lose sight of why you are there. You have power only because of the people, and the people will remove you if they find that you are not only necessarily performing in terms of policies, but Kadir, come down on the ground a little bit sometimes and shout mana, you know, and say, because you shouted me all the time when you wanted to vote. Sometimes they could just pass through and see how people are doing and stop making false promises. That is the other problem.
That's the beauty about or Professor Arthur. He never lose his touch with the common man.
Mm-hmm.
But the others cannot do it because they have to prove that they are pompous. That's the real problem. They forget all exactly that they have to depend on the people to get back there.
Well, I'm hoping that this particular government, listen, there's some people on this side of the coin, this government, as well as the previous administration, that never lost it with their people.
No.
But there are some that, I can say for sure that they're grassroots. You know, I mean, the prime minister, well, that goes without saying. I think everybody knows that the prime minister can sit down with you on the block and still go and drink tea with the queen and fit in both areas easily. But there are others that may not be so comfortable, and you can see it sometimes because they're not comfortable going on a block or going to a rum shop. I'm not saying you have to go to a rum shop and drink with the guys if you don't drink, but just socialize with the people and let them know from time to time you haven't forgotten them, but stop making promises. A promise is a comfort for a fool. And I really feel that it's time that politicians say things like, I'm going to see what I can do. And some politicians do that. I know there are some politicians for a fact that don't promise. They said, I'm going to try. I'm going to see what we can do. But the ones that promise you, and then when you pick up a phone, man, let me call so-and-so, he promised me a job. Then you can't find them. And it frustrates then the person because they actually believed it. They actually believed that this person was going to get them a job. So it's a lot. It's a lot, you know, that politicians do that create a negative impact on how people think. And similarly, there's a lot that they do that is positive, that has a positive impact. Last words at you, sir?
Yes, ma'am. I don't have anything more to say. I think I have made enough.
Yes, sir.
Contribution there of Heavenly Tax Man as to what he was saying. And hope the next time he comes, he will tell me for the 2 years how much the government has saved from the 13.5%. He knows good statistics, so he can come. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, sir. Down to Brass Tacks, you're on the air. Good morning, 11:52.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, great, I'm finally on.
Yes, you are.
Hi, Joanne, how are you?
I'm good, what about you?
I'm also quite good, but a little bit disturbed about what's going on in terms of the gun violence in this country. And I don't want to take up too much time today, but I just wanted to touch on some single areas that I find are very, very troubling. I think that we look at violence in a very kind of narrow way, and we don't look at violence across the board in our country. We don't look at the domestic violence, which continues to be kind of pushed under the carpet in this country. And if you want to talk about situations where boys are being raised in unstable home environments, you know, that is a hotbed and a good incubator for a lot of their maybe violent attitudes towards women and inability to have relationships. But I also want to talk about the violence that is occurring, like, systemically and structurally in this country in terms of our banking system, in terms of our social work and our accessibility. And when I want to talk about social workers and social work and accessibility.
Caller, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
I'm so sorry for that. We had to break. So continue.
That's right. Yeah, I think I am going to try to narrow down what I was saying. And I won't touch the thing about social workers. But it's just to shortly say that just the attitudes of our social workers in the welfare department when you call in, it's deplorable. It really is, the level of service that you're given. And if you want to talk about people feeling hopeless and helpless, I don't see how their attitudes usually contribute to that general feeling of hopelessness, you know, because, you know, you're last straw, and then you go to someone who's supposed to be able to help you, who's a professional, and they don't act professionally. But I don't want to say very much more on that. Mm-hmm. What I really called about is the report, I think it was by UNICEF, which talked about a number of single parents and the linkage between that and our boys being at risk. And I think that we need to be very careful when we issue and interpret reports, because there might be a lot of biases in terms of how they would have structured their instruments and their questions. And I think that single parenting needs to be looked at on a continuum. There are many single parents who do an excellent job, who are very resourceful, and there are those who are at risk and in need of help. And I think that when we look throughout this whole question of raising balanced citizens, that we need to look more deeply at resources and how we are allotting resources in this country, especially to persons who are at risk, and being better able to identify, especially from the school setting, from the get-go, who is at risk and who is in need of help, because we will continue to run this pattern where we have children who have behavioral problems, they're not doing well and having any kind of success in our school setting, and then going out and still not being able to keep down a job because they haven't had school is a setting for training, vocational training, and all other kinds of trainings. And if you have not honed those skills, coming to school on time, being attentive, all those things that are important to keeping a job, you are not going to be able to hold on that job as you progress in through the system. And the other thing that we need to look at is that if we don't spend it at the front end, we're going to spend it in our prisons. And when I go into the prisons and I do the work, it is a lot of this kind of training and talking that you have to do, which you know should have been done much, much earlier. And I think that is what Barbados needs to focus on. Where are our resources? How are we allocating resources? And how are we helping the people at risk to do better?
I totally agree with you, and thank you so much for your contribution.